Are listening to CITR 101.9 FM, and it's the Inksteds. I'm Robin Constabaris, filling in for your usual host, Robin McConnell, who's out doing something else. And it's great to be here. I haven't been on the show for a while, and it's really exciting. And to make it even more exciting, my guest today in studio with me is this guy's so amazing. Like, I can't believe all the stuff he's done in the years I've known him before. But it's Julian Lawrence. So hi, Julian.
Hey, Robin.
Thanks a lot for joining me here at CITR.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for the ride down.
Oh, yeah. I always like to give my guests a ride to just kind of, you know, get them into the groove of talking to me and get them all orientated. So I first met Julian about 10 years ago when I was working on my first book, and he heard through the grapevine there was like some new cartoonist in town. And at the time, he was compiling a newspaper comic insert for the now-defunct Terminal City called Cartoon Party. And Julian has done a lot of projects like that, but since that was the one where I met him, I always think of that as his origin, even though he did, like, way more before that. So I'd like to start off just by talking about your different editorial things you've done, which was Cartoon Party, that was a local thing. It was all local people in Cartoon Party, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fitting in with Terminal City, being like a local magazine focusing on local arts and entertainment. So, yeah, it looked like it would be a good venue to have some local artists contribute to a... It was quarterly at the time. We were doing it every 3 months as an insert in Terminal City to get local cartoonists to contribute their comics. Never really had a theme to it, kept it open. There was one time when there was a theme, when everyone contributed a comic strip, and that's probably my favorite cartoon party, is when
there was about
20 different artists contributing comic strips. So it looks like the province, but just with strange comic strips inside it.
The classic newspaper strip format, and then was that like, I sorry listening audience, but my mind tends to skip all over the place, so will this interview, because was that the impetus to, or was that the seed of the idea that eventually led to the publication of the Drippy Gazette?
With Terminal City with the cartoon party as an insert in Terminal City. That really got us inspired, the newsprint, the ink, all that stuff.
And the Drippy, backtrack, because I didn't really like tell people like who you are and what you do. So Julian's been in the Vancouver cartooning scene for a really long time, and he's kind of, I don't know how you manage to do it, because you're sort of under the radar. Like, you're doing so many things. Like, you're an editor, you're a comics creator yourself, and like incredibly prolific.
Mm-hmm.
You're teaching cartooning, and as if that's not enough, you're also like publishing the Drippy Town comics, right?
Yeah.
So that's like a lot of different hats to wear, right? And it's just, your contribution to the Vancouver comics scene is enormous, right? And yet, it's almost as if, like, people just kind of take it for granted, or they're not really looking at it, because without you, where would we be? So if you're into comics and you're listening to the show, you're probably familiar with Drippy Town Comics. It's a try-to-be annual Vancouver comics anthology that has like international content as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that had grown out of the Drippy Gazette, which was started out as a monthly newspaper that you were doing with, I think, Rob Dayton and Ted Dave.
Lester Smolensky.
Lester Smolensky, that was incredibly, had an incredibly heavy comics content, right?
Yeah, that was the mandate, was comics, entertainment, and music.
Yeah. So. Because when people read a newspaper, don't you agree? I mean, that a lot of times people will turn to the comics page first.
I certainly will.
Yeah, I know I do.
The quality of a newspaper, I think, is kind of reflected in the comics that it prints.
Yeah.
And as you can tell, the West End has gone way downhill.
Well, I don't feel it would be appropriate for me to comment on that.
No, but I will.
But yeah, they even got rid of a Search and Destroy, so now their only comic is Life in Hell.
Life in Hell,
yeah.
By Matt Groening. I think it's the only thing he draws, too.
Well, yeah, and I
or does he draw it?
I don't know. Like, I can't comment on that.
But I like the chronology that you did. It's true. I've been in Vancouver for coming up to 20 years now, and when I first came here, I was publishing zines and doing photocopied stuff, and then meeting more and more people.
And your zine was called Rubberneck, right? And you had,
but even before Rubberneck, I did a zine called Cartoon Party.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah, I did a couple of issues of Cartoon Party, and through Cartoon Party, I met Blaine Thurier and a few other comics folks. And then from there, I started meeting the new comics folks that were publishing their own comic in town.
Right, and that was Ted Dave and Teresa Henry and so many.
Sean Hayes, Holgate. Yeah, there was a whole bunch of folks.
People that have seemed to drop out since then or gone on to other things.
Computer games.
Yeah.
I think a lot of them went into animation and computer games.
All animation's where the money is if you're into cartooning. But that's like, I had no idea that you had done that. And then you had Rubberneck, which was your zine, but it had like other contributors in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I noticed a lot of the content of that. I was looking at my old Rubbernecks the other day, getting ready for this radio show, and you kind of have, I know a lot of your stories are, like, you're interested in biographies of people that have had, like, very unusual lives or kind of, kind of strange lives. And then, like, sometimes you do, like, a lot of poo jokes.
The scatological humor. Yeah. There's just something about scatological humor that I really like.
Yeah, I've noticed that. Although, like, it's not as tawdry as it sounds when you just say poo jokes or scatological. Like, at least it has, like, some sophistication to it.
Yeah,
right?
I'd probably put some substance behind it. Like the talking ass guy. I mean, there is sort of a comment on, you know, the world oligarchy that sort of controls society and stuff. But
yeah, Julian has this character where it's got this, like, giant ass, and the ass is, like, controlling the body, and it's got a nose and eyes and everything, and it's always, well, I think originally the character was, like, this, patriarch of this big corporation, and, you know, this heartless, like, corporation. But then I remember you did one where it was St. Francis Assisi, but it's Ass's Eye, right?
Yeah, changed his name to Ass's Eye as a comment with, yeah, like Assisi, but pronounced Ass's Eye.
Because you also sometimes have the kind of recovering tortured Catholic kind of theme, a la Robert Crumb or Joe Matt, right?
Well, they teach well. Those Catholics, it stays with you for a long time.
I don't think you ever really recover.
No, it's with you. It's in your soul, if there is such a thing.
So Julian had, in the, I think, early 90s, Fantagraphics published a series of your own comic, which was Crucial Fiction. And it went for, what, three issues. And one whole issue was the story of Pope Joan, mm-hmm. who was, like, the lady pope that gave birth in front of millions, or, well, I guess thousands of people during a drought, and was stoned to death or dragged to death behind a horse.
Yeah, the story's legendary.
Yeah.
I mean, you hear talk about it and stuff, and I think there's maybe mention of it in the Da Vinci Code and stuff, too, but... Yeah, I thought it was a great story to document as a comic. Yeah. And then the following issue, I did the one about Dr. Brinkley, the goat gland man.
Yeah.
Which, again, I found to be a fascinating story that not too many people know about.
Well, I think you should tell the CITR listeners about Dr. Brinkley, because it's a great, maybe they'll be looking for that comic. It's a really great story.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Yeah. This guy named Dr. Brinkley, who was born in the late 1800s, was able to get a fake doctor degree by buying it from these sort of fly-by-night schools that were around at the turn of the 20th century. So with this fake doctoral degree, he was able to set up a clinic in Kansas City, and he stated that he was able to get people to feel younger again if he would transplant goat glands into their bodies. So he transplanted hundreds and hundreds of thousands of goat glands into the sick and ailing bodies of usually rich people, because it would cost $1,000 per gland. And the way that he would do this is, it was actually documented in the court case when he was taken to court in the late 30s, but he would put an incision in the scrotum of the male victim, and then insert the goat gland that had been chosen the night before by the patient from he had a corral of goats in the backyard, and then just before the operation, the patients would go and choose a goat, and then Dr. Brinkley would kill the goat, remove the goat's testicles, and then implant them into the patient's scrotum.
But he would just, like, shove them in,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. There was no, like, anti-rejection drugs at the time, and he wouldn't actually sew it into the person.
It wasn't attached to anything.
No, it would just stick it inside and would rot. So people were, it wasn't very well documented, because he was able to escape from state to state, getting different licenses. Whenever one state would revoke his license, he would just move to another state and then keep the practice going. That went on for 20 years. So it was kind of hard to document the kind of problems that he was causing, but there were documents of people coming down with TB and certain other diseases, and I'm wondering if there could be a link to AIDS going back to the 30s and 20s.
Oh yeah, like that was how do you find these stories? Like, I know you're interested in those kind of, like, weird sort of true, like, completely outrageous kind of lives, but where do you source these things? Or mm-hmm. are you just
Well, truth is stranger than fiction, and you can find a lot of stuff in thrift stores, but the Brinkley case I actually discovered when a friend of mine gave me a book that Brinkley had written in the 20s, and it was called Shadows and Sunshine, and it was a book that Brinkley wrote and published a lot of books. He had his own publishing company, too. In fact, he had the most powerful radio transmitter in North America back in 1925, so he was able to broadcast his message across there. But a friend of mine gave me a book that Brinkley had written in 1928 called Shadows and Sunshine, and in it he had testimonials from patients saying what a great operation this was. There was great photos of his clinic in Milford, Kansas. And that's when I first discovered him, and it just seemed really weird because he was talking about putting goat glands into people and what beneficial reactions the patients were having. And the more I looked into it, the more I was finding more information about Dr. Brinkley, to the point where there was a great biography written about him in the 1950s called The Goat Gland Man, which is now out of print, and I can't find a copy of it anywhere. I got it from the library, but it's gone now. I think they sold it.
Oh, no. Mm-hmm. It's when I can't say that on air, but, you know, sometimes at the library, they have a book you really want. It's just better to pay the lost thing, right?
It's true. No, but yeah, it's gone now. Yeah. But the comic exists. And so with the comic, I documented Brinkley's rise and fall.
It's almost like, did he make that up? But it's true. Yeah, and so that's sort of the past, though, because you did that story like quite a long time ago.
Yeah, Crucial Fiction number 3.
Yeah, and you're currently publishing Drippy Town.
Yeah, we're up to number
comics,
5 now.
Yeah, and I noticed in the last 2 or 3, the last 2 issues, I think, that you've started like an epic mm-hmm. story where it's Drippy the Newsboy's mama, and it's based on what is it based on?
American writer named Stephen Crane.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's based on a story that he wrote called George's Mother. Stephen Crane was a writer. He wrote 3 stories before he died. The last one that he wrote was the Red Badge of Courage.
Okay, well, that's a famous story.
Which is quite famous. Yeah. But yeah, he died really young, but his writing style was amazing because he would write like the narrative text in this really elegant prose, but the way that he would have the character speak was in this like streetwise dialect. And it made for a really, really great contrast between narration and dialogue. So with the comic, what I'm trying to do is sort of capture that with the visuals, and that I'm making the drawings quite detailed and very precise so that the reader knows exactly what's going on in the action. But then having the dialogue spoken in sort of slang, lots of abbreviations and just simple plain folk talk.
Well, I haven't read the story that it's based on, mm-hmm. but I'm finding the comic version, the Drippy comic version of it, quite like, what will happen to Drippy? Will he become a useless alcoholic? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's the thing. That's
kind of on the road. He's lost his whole family except for his mother, his loving church-going mother, and
she's trying to get him to go to church. Yeah. But you know, he's being influenced by the bottle and his pals. Yeah, it's a great simple story, and I'm imagining Drippy the Newsboy as being 19 years old. He's coming of age. He's trying to break away from the apron strings. He's sort of conflicted because he has strong connection to his mom and to his family. His family having all passed away, including his dad, who was an alcoholic. But then being 19 and wanting to rebel against the church and all this other stuff, he's really swayed to hanging out with his pals and becoming an alcoholic, I guess. So yeah, it's a 10-part story. Finishing the 3rd part right now, and it just gets more complex.
I just, like, you blow me away, like, just how prolific you are. Like, that's so ambitious. Like, for me, I'm like, oh my god, a 10-part story. And you're also I think it may be on hold, but aren't you also working on a graphic novel about Long Tak Sam?
Yeah, that's. Yeah. I'm not sure what's going on with that, but Long Tak Sam was a great project that I worked on a couple of years ago with Global Mechanic. Anne-Marie Fleming was doing a film about her great-grandfather, who was a magician, and she wanted to have a comic as a promotional piece for the film. But as the project got larger and larger, she started incorporating the comics that I drew into the film. So there's great scenes in the film where the comic is actually animated and brought to life.
Oh, I had no idea, because I haven't seen it, although I've heard it's really good. And I always hear rumors about, oh, it's getting bigger. And but I really liked the promotional comic he did for Long Talk, Sam. Like, he had such a wild life, too. And I thought, wow, what a great... you know, how, what a suitable match, like, to have you be doing the comic, because his story is kind of one of those, you know, poor Chinese boy becomes, like, this world famous, like, magician that's, like, virtually unknown now.
Yeah.
You know, 75 years later or 80 years later.
And that's sort of, that's touched on in the film, too. He did have opportunities to go to Hollywood, but in the 20s and 30s, he found that there was a lot of racism going on, and that the portrayals of Asians in cinema at the time was something that he didn't want to support. So he prevented his family from going that route and refused to do it himself, to go into Hollywood. But yeah, having me work on that project again was great, because as we were mentioned earlier, I really like doing stories that are true, truth being stranger than fiction, and working on this comic tied that all in together, because it was a true story with great details documenting how this guy grew up in China, learned to become a magician, and then traveled the world.
Yeah, and it's got great publishing potential too, because I think when Penguin's like on board to publish it, I think
that was that's the talk, and Marie's putting it together, so I'm just waiting to hear what's going on with that. But another project I'm working on now is the Degrassi graphic novel.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You're so full of surprises. Like, I don't know how you keep track of all that. So what's the Degrassi novel?
It's based on Degrassi, The Next Generation. And basically, I'm doing the lettering, the speech bubbles, and all the optical effects, like shading and light effects and stuff like that.
Well, who's drawing it?
This guy called Ed Northcott. I think he's a superhero artist.
Oh,
he lives out in Toronto.
That wouldn't surprise me.
But the drawings look great, I must say, and it looks like it'll be a good teen comic book.
Yeah.
Great way of getting the young folks involved.
Pays the bills too.
It pays the bills.
It's not so easy to do when you're cartoon crazy.
No kidding.
I notice, according to the time chart, that it's time to do the CITR promo, but there's all new equipment here, and I haven't been here for a while, and I can't find the mini disc that has them, so I'm just going to ask Julian to do maybe a station identification as our promo.
That's a good idea.
I think you can do that?
I think I can.
Okay. Doesn't have to be anything too fancy. You're listening to...
CITR Radio.
On your dial at
101.9 FM broadcast from UBC.
That's right, the Student Union Building. So that now I can write down that's done. And one thing I have not mentioned yet, and I'm just gonna like kind of go off track and mention it, because it's time to play some music, is as well as being all the things we've touched on, Julian's also a musician. And he's got several bands, and I don't even know actually what I'm about to play. So before I play it, though, I realized I forgot to identify the song I played at the opening of the show. So if you guys still remember that song, that was Something's Coming by iMonster, and the album name is Never Odd or Even. And now we're about to hear...
July 4th Toilet.
Ooh, everybody loves hearing July 4th Toilet. And what's the song?
This song's called Thanks Drugs,
okay.
And it's a demo. We're still piecing it together. It's almost completed, but it'll be on our upcoming second album called July 4th Toilet Presents Balls Boogie, featuring me and Bobby McGee, Kentucky Whore, and many others.
So Julian's a long-time member, founding member of July 4th Toilet.
12 years.
It's
our 12th year now.
It's amazing, and we're going to hear some of their music right now. If you haven't heard of July 4th Toilet, where have you been?
Thank you.
Well, Julian, that was awesome. That was so July 4th toilet.
I'm glad you liked it.
It was good. And now this is the part of the show where we're going to do our public service announcement. And I wanted to tie it in a bit with another activity that Julian Lawrence, who's with me in the studio today, I'm Robin Constabaris, and Julian is teaching cartooning now for adults at Emily Carr, and you've been doing that for a while, right?
Yeah, this is third year.
Yeah, how's that going? Are you finding a lot of really enthused kind of younger people that are like getting turned on and tuned into comics?
All ages, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, we know we got folks in the class from 18 to 60.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's great. And the reason that ties in is on July 29th I have all this information here. Where is it? Oh, sorry, June 30th to July 30th at the Concourse Gallery at Emily Carr. There's a book art show that's being curated by Owen Plummer, and Julian will have work in the show.
Mm-hmm. And you too.
I will too, as well as Mark DeLong, Joe Cook, Lyons, Laura Evely, and I must say she's quite excited to be in the show. Mark Bell, that should excite you comics fans out there, as well as Rebecca Dart, who's really causing a lot of stir in the comics community with her comic that came out a few years ago, Rabbit Head, and it just seems to have legs. Like, people just never get tired of that one, because it is really good. Mm-hmm. Like, if you don't have a copy of it, you should grab one. Also in the show, Amy Lockhart, there's Kara Sebright, and Owen Plummer, who's also curating, and he's going to get a whole bunch of books. I know I loaned him my old Roz and stuff for display, so he always like puts together a good show. And that's at Emily Carr, so you can go see that anytime between June 30th and July 30th. And you can also, if you care to, come to the opening night, which will be June 29th. That's next Thursday from 6 to whenever, I guess 6 to 10 or something. Mm-hmm. And I'll be there and Julian will be there because he's going to be teaching his class that night.
And also on July 24th, to tie into the book arts thing, I'm doing a two-hour presentation on comics and entertainment.
Oh, wow. Is that like a free free thing? So where is that going to be?
That'll be on the campus at Emily Carr. Yeah.
But is it in like one of the big rooms? Or
yeah.
People will be able to find it, right?
Yeah, room 260. Yeah.
What time? Actually. What time?
It starts at 7.
At 7?
7 p.m. Yeah. till 9 p.m.
Well, that's awesome.
And my other band, the Poutines, will be performing a small...
Oh, yeah.
Gig there as well.
And we're going to hear a track from the Poutines right now. So this is like your new band.
Yeah. Instrumental prog pop.
Yeah. All right. Here we go. So what's the name of this track?
This track is El Dorado Abridged, Side 1.
All right. Let's hear it. We'll be right back. Remember, you heard it here first on CITR 101.9 FM.
That's right. That's the world premiere.
That is right. I'm Robin Constabaris, filling in for Robin McConnell, your usual host of Inkstuds, the show about comics. And I'm here live in the studio with Julian Lawrence, and you just heard his one of his bands, the Poutines, off their demo album. And I don't, have you guys even played in public yet?
No, our first show is next week.
Yeah. Oh wow. At your talk that you're giving about comics,
nope.
Emily Carr.
No.
Oh, that's not the first one.
No, the talk I'm giving at Emily Carr is on July 24th.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I keep getting June and July mixed up. Yeah.
Yeah, they both start with J-U.
Yeah.
So does my name.
It's summer. Oh my gosh.
That's too many
now
Jews.
I'm really confused. Somebody in a Big Brother world could take that out of context, Julian,
so. Well,
and he could be in big trouble.
So yeah, that was the Poutines, and the song was El Dorado, inspired by the Electric Light Orchestra's El Dorado. And the Poutines is me on guitar, Kim Stewart on bass, and Joe Mercer on drums.
I can't believe it. Okay, so Julian Lawrence, just to recap, is, as well as being an accomplished longtime musician, a more accomplished, more longtime comic artist, comic teacher, comic publisher, and comic editor. Not to put too fine a point on it. And we were going to talk a little bit now about the...
Learning through the arts?
Yeah, learning through the arts.
Yeah.
That's right.
I've been working with a company called Learning Through the Arts. It's a nonprofit organization, and their headquarters are in Toronto and New York with the Royal Conservatory of Music. And the Royal Conservatory of Music is, they've got an art outreach program called Learning Through the Arts. So what I do with Learning Through the Arts is I go into schools all across the Lower Mainland. I had 30 classes this year. And in the classes, I'm basically teaching math, science, English, socials, but using comics as a way of keeping the kids focused and interested. And I'm finding it's great because the subject matter, the curriculum, sort of gives, it gives real substance to the comics. And then the comics really helps to keep the kids focused on the curriculum. So it really, really works well hand in hand.
Are you actually like drawing the comics?
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's the primary focus, because I go in and I say I'm a cartoonist and we're going to draw cartoons.
Yay. Oh, so the kids are drawing them too, right?
The kids are drawing the cartoons, yeah. And I teach them step by step, starting with thumbnail sketches, creating characters, and then, you know, building it up from there. So, for example, when we did math, I had all the kids grade 2 kids. They created cartoon characters based on simple shapes, squares, circles, triangles, and then the storyline was that this two-dimensional object, the square, the circle, was wanted to become three-dimensional. So through comics, I was able to teach the kids how to draw a cube or a pyramid or a sphere using shading, and then converting these two-dimensional cartoon characters into three-dimensional cartoon characters, and that would be the gag.
Wow. You know, it's such a turnaround. Like, it's so polar opposite of when comics first got popular with kids and they were like polluting like the children's minds, and I always thought that was so backwards, because kids love comics and it helps them learn how to read, right? You know,
So
it has like the visual backup, so they have like a visual context of what's going on in the story and stuff. And so how did you get connected with that?
With Learning Through the Arts?
Yeah, Learning Through the Arts.
They had an ad in, I think it was the Georgia Strait.
Mm-hmm.
And I sent them a resume, and I'd just started working at Emily Carr at the time too, so I did have some educational experience. And I wasn't sure what the program was about, and I was kind of skeptical at first, thinking, okay, I got to teach kids math with comics, but I found from doing it now I'm in my second year of it, that it really does sort of give really solid subject matter to the comics that the kids are working on. And like you said, it really does help with writing and all this stuff, and the feedback I'm getting from the teachers is really positive, because with comics, you pencil and then you ink. And in the pencil stage, that really forces you to edit and revise and make sure that you've got everything correct before you commit to the inking stage. And what the teachers are finding is that the kids are really, really conscientious and conscious of the fact that they have to, you know, correct the spelling and make sure that everything is done properly in the pencil stage before they actually go to the inking. And then when we photocopy them, it's such a revelation to these kids. Like, every school has a photocopier, but nobody really uses it for their artwork. And so when they draw these comics on 11 by 17 sheets and then we shrink them down to comic book size, the kids are blown away, like, by seeing seeing how great it looks when it's reduced.
Well, how rewarding, too. Mm-hmm. Wow. You're like a true comics activist, like, turning the young minds today into, like, the comic aficionados of tomorrow.
That's what I tell them. Yeah. You guys are the future of comics.
That's right, and we need a future, because it seems like they've just been getting false start after false start into, like, the general mainstream, like, consciousness of society.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but comics, yeah, it's very grounding. It's so organic, you know. Yeah. Pencil to paper. You don't need a computer. You don't really need.
Well, kids are naturals at telling stories through pictures too.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, when they go do their artwork or whatever, they often tell a story, either something that happened to them or something they made up. So it just seems like a natural transition, right?
Yeah, and sometimes it's trying to rein that in, because they'll put a whole bunch of information into one drawing, and they kind of have to explain to me what's going on. And then you got to try and explain to them, you could break it down into four panels instead of fitting it all into one big drawing. You could break it down and then have it actually tell a story from panel to panel. But it's true, like, they do have this natural affinity for storytelling, as well as an exuberance and just an excitement that really keeps me inspired too.
And then self-consciousness.
Yeah, for the most part, a lot of kids will just go ahead and do stuff without, you know, really being worried about how they look doing it.
How does that compare to, like, when you teach adults, like, when you're just teaching cartooning?
Is there
that kind of self-conscious barrier that they have to get over?
Yeah, for sure. Some of the adults are a bit more reserved about it, and some have even expressed being feeling intimidated, because they see that there's people around them that might draw a little better than them, and so that sort of puts them into a shell. They don't feel like they're quite up to par. But from my experience with the classes that I've given to Adam Lee Carr, two adults, is that everybody's drawing in a different style, and whenever somebody completes a comic, it's completely successful, because it has a beginning, middle, and end. And the story, through the process that we've done over the 6 weeks, comes across really clearly.
Wow, and so now you're teaching beginner and advanced for adults, I think.
Yeah, we're doing a level one, which is a way of just getting people inspired to create characters and then sort of fit them in within a 1 to 2, 3 page comic. And then the second level is getting people to think a bit larger. Think of a long story, starting with the cover, the layout, what size you want to use, how to use the photocopier, how to use a proportional scale.
Wow, it's kind of great for them too, because you're publishing these Drippy Town comics. So if they start, like, you're kind of a connection, right, that they can use to get more into the scene.
I'm open to people contributing stuff all the time, like... Yeah, I've asked a couple of students to contribute to Drippy Town, but I haven't heard back from them. So, again, they might be reserved still.
They have no idea how hard it is to get published. They would be, like, all over the opportunity, right?
It's tough. Yeah. You got to make a lot of the opportunities yourself. You really got to go out there and make it happen.
Fuck, you're a living example of that. I mean, okay, so you guys, Ted and Robert, were publishing the Drippy Gazette.
Mm-hmm.
And then, which was like the newspaper, and then you got a Zurich grant through the Zurich Foundation to publish the first Drippy Town comic, right?
Yeah, we put together the comics that we had published the year previously in the Gazette, and sent it down as a proposal for an anthology comic book. Zurich being a foundation in the States that was started by Peter Laird from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, to give a little back.
Yeah, give back to the comics community.
Yeah.
So we got some turtle money. And then started Drippy Town Comics.
I actually find, like, the Zurich Foundation selects, like, really good, like, projects to back. Like, I really, usually the stuff that I see that they've funded is, like, really, like, it's contemporary and adult and...
Yeah.
Yeah,
they're not going for the superhero stuff per se. It's a lot of, I guess, for lack of a better word, the indie comics.
But I think you can only get it for the first or the first two issues or something. So is Dripping Town now is like self-sufficient enough that...
Yeah, like essentially. Yeah. I mean, thanks to Zurich, we got a good distributor down in the States, Diamond, and they've been picking it up every year. So we get global distribution through Diamond.
Oh, that's amazing. That's like an amazing accomplishment.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's like really good talent in those Drippy comics. So
yeah, for sure. And like you said, there's an international component with say like Tony Millionaire.
Yeah.
And there was Nicholas Gurewitch too, who submitted last issue from New York.
Smell of Steve.
Smell of Steve was there in the first issue.
Yeah, I like his stuff. Wow. I don't know. I guess we should start kind of making sure that we've covered everything we want to talk about. Talk about your longtime partner once had a really wonderful gallery shop, the Cosmopolis.
Yeah, on Commercial Drive.
That the heart and soul of there were several people like co-running that show, right?
Yeah.
And their hearts and souls were so into that shop.
I know.
And it was like a really great gallery shop that was once on Commercial Drive. And that is the tie-in to the benefit that you're going to tell us about. Where are the Poutines playing that benefit?
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of bands playing.
So that's their like world stage premiere.
That's right. Yeah, next week at the Lamplighter.
Yeah.
On June 27th, there's a benefit for the Petri Dish, which is a small shop located on Main Street near RX Comics, in that little wedge-shaped area down near Main and is it Kingsway?
It's the crotch of Mount Pleasant. It's like that where Main and Kingsway like go into a V, and then the top of the V is Broadway.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, just in that little wedge area is a small shop. Yeah. The crotch is the Petri Dish. And it's a sweet little shop. It reminds me of Cosmopolis, where at Cosmopolis the mandate was to feature local handcrafted artwork. And so Jackie Dives at the Petri Dish is organizing a benefit for the shop. It'll be at the Lamplighter next Tuesday, June 27th. It starts at 6 p.m. And there's 10 bands.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that's why it's starting at 6.
Ew. What, do you know who the other bands are?
Stumbler's Inn. Yeah. The Pirates. The Poutines. I didn't bring a list with me, but there's 10 bands.
That's a lot. Yeah, I wonder if I can look that up on the internet. I always forget I have internet access right on air.
Oh, check it out.
Yeah, I know. It's just coming up. It takes me a long time to then figure out so maybe I shouldn't be doing that now. I shouldn't learn while I'm like broadcasting, right?
On the job training.
Okay, I'll just figure this out right now.
So that's next Tuesday. 10 bands, $10. That and then on July 15th, July 4th, Toilet is playing with The World Provider, who's coming in from Montreal.
Oh, where's that?
That's at Pat's Pub.
Yeah. You know, let's talk a bit about July 4th Toilet, because while it's not comics per se, like there's such a crossover, you know.
Performed with the Toilet.
Rob's like made a lot of comics.
And Rob's made a lot of comics. Yeah.
You know, I have, and along with like what about 100 other people? I mean, there's been so many people that have like guest performed, because July 4th Toilet never does the same show twice.
That's right.
Every show's
different.
Except one day for the 10th anniversary show, they did the same show twice, but on the same day. So it kind of, there was so much prep for that show.
There was an all ages one, and then we did the adult one.
Julian, you're just like such a comics mind. So Julian did this huge, like ambitious, like 10th anniversary July 4th show, where like there was I don't know how many people performed, like what, 13 or 14?
Yeah, there was in the band.
Yeah,
yeah, we had 18 people.
Oh yeah, 18, and lots of rehearsals, and animal costumes. So he's like, he's doing all that, and it's like this insane job, right? That's like all this coordination and stuff. And like while he's doing it, he does like this comics program. It's like all done in comics. It like tells the story of the rock opera that we're performing. When do you sleep? Like,
all you need is 5 hours a night.
Like, I don't know, like, or do you just never erase, or, like, I just don't understand, like, how you can be, like, just so incredibly prolific.
That's a good question. No, I'll pencil everything, and then I'll put tracing paper on top and ink directly over, so I don't have to erase.
Never erase.
Not really.
Wow.
But that was a great show. It's true. The 10th anniversary rock fantasy show was a lot of fun.
So if any of you have a time machine and you can like go back to the past and go see it, you should go. It was so good. No.
Well, we got DVDs of it too.
That's true. Yeah. And the DVD is pretty good.
It comes with a comic.
Yeah. It's got a comic in it. That's right. And there was a t-shirt too. I just found out the other day when I saw you wearing it, and I was like, oh, I never got a t-shirt.
There was so much going on. But you can go to July4thToilet.com and get the lowdown on all that stuff. But recently we were featured on the KTEL website because of that, because what we did with that 10th anniversary show was to do a live version of a KTEL album called Rock Fantasy.
That KTEL actually produced the music for.
Original music. Yeah. I think it was KTEL's one of only two KTEL original albums. And it was a concept album about animals living in a land, or people living in the land of animals. But,
kicking myself I didn't bring that CD with me, because I thought of it and I was like, oh no.
The Rock Fantasy?
Yeah, the Rock Fantasy. July 4th Toilet doing Rock Fantasy. So KTEL actually like put a little a cameo or something.
Well, yeah, the woman who was running the KTEL website put a blurb about July 4th Toilet doing this, but she recently lost all the rights to the KTEL website. She got a lawyers coming down on her for doing this.
Oh, was it like some kind of radio free like website?
She was actually invited by KTEL headquarters in Winnipeg to start up the website, to archive all of their stuff, and then I think just recently the lawyers might have found out that there was some money that could be made from this, so they've like put a cease and desist order on her website and they've taken it over. It's too bad.
I've heard KTEL's been really suffering for finances.
So they're grasping at straws now.
Was she doing the work for free too?
Yeah. Because she loves KTEL, right?
You know what, Julian? I always remember that once he did a cover for Terminal City where it's this big, fat guy in a business suit, and he's sitting on, like, he's suffocating the muse of art, right?
Yes.
And he's, like, the corporation.
Yeah.
And she's, like, the you know, pure spirit of creativity.
That's right. She's being crushed by this fat guy who's sitting on top of her.
And so often when I'm talking to you, I don't know why, but that image comes to mind.
I should put the original in the show that we'll have next week.
That would be great. Yeah.
I should get the original up there. But yeah, that was basically what I was feeling, and still kind of do. I can see commerce crushing art, and essentially that seems to be what's happening these days.
Co-opting it. You know?
Yeah, it's prevailing. Yeah. Money talks, and that seems to be what's going on.
Well, you know, it's kind of hard to... Yeah, it is what's going on, and that seems to be where the money is, unless you can, like, wrestle up enough grassroots support, right, that people are willing to pay. Like, it's kind of a bummer. Like, I mean, the internet's great, like, new technology is great, and that anybody can publish or anybody can, you know, produce their own album or whatever now.
Yeah.
But people get a little crazy about file sharing and stuff. Like, it's sort of sad. When, you know, artists are just struggling so much and people enjoy it, like they want to consume what the artist is producing, but they're not willing to pay for it. It's kind of sad, right?
Yeah, it's a weird thing. There seems to be, you know, the internet will offer you some freedom, but yeah. I'm really skeptical about the whole internet thing. It just seems to me you're just watching television with a billion channels.
It's so watered down, right?
Totally. Bad animation. Visuals that are hard on the eyes. I mean, who can read a comic on a TV screen? It's just
I can't imagine that you watched. I don't think you watched TV.
No, I watch a lot of DVDs.
Yeah.
And America's Next Top Model.
Oh, yeah? Really? I don't believe you.
Let me tell you.
I think we've talked. You know, it's kind of hard. Like, I brought you in to do a profile on you, and
yeah,
we talked a little of this and talked a little of that, but it's almost impossible to cover, like, your contributions to, like, the Vancouver comic scene.
Well, I think we've covered quite a bit. We talked about Drippy and Drippy Town, the zines, teaching at Emily Carr, teaching with Learning Through the Arts.
That's all your coordination efforts with, like, your bounds and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you must be a real people person, because I would have, like, just been so frustrated by now. Mm-hmm. It's hard to coordinate people, and, like, you know, I remember one time I brought, it's like I'm really slow, like I'm a slow worker, right? And I remember one time bringing my pages for Drippy while you were, like, photocopying the layout, and and Ted Dave showed up with his page, but he's like, I just have to finish it. He's in the graphic shop, like, putting the finishing touches on his comic right now. How does Julian do it? But he does. So this has been Ink Studs. I'm Robin Constamaris, filling in for Robin McConnell, your usual host. And I've been talking to Julian Lawrence, publisher, editor, and contributor to Drippy Town Comics. Flagship member of July 4th Toilet and Poutines, and teacher of young minds and olds on the joy of comics. And don't forget, you can go hear his talk at Emily Carr on July 24th. I remembered! So take that, attention deficit disorder.
Come
see his work at the show, Book Arts. It's at Emily Carr, starting next Thursday through almost the whole month of July. And even if Julian watches America's Next Top Model, I don't, and I don't watch TV, so some of you may associate this closing song with that 70s show, who Cheap Trick covered this original version I'm about to play. But this has been kind of a theme of my life in the last 6 months, and I wanted to share it with you. So this is Big Star singing to you on the street. And it's CITR 101.9 FM.